Hey y'all, life's journey is filled with change, growth, and exciting new chapters. Whether you're welcoming a new family member, stepping into a new city, or chasing after your biggest dreams, you need a ride that's built with more space for the grand challenges ahead. The Toyota Grand Highlander is made for those who embrace every twist and turn. With advanced safety features, innovative tech, and a bold, sophisticated design, it's the SUV that adapts with you with room to spare. This spacious beauty seats up to 8, gives you up to 97.5 cubic feet of cargo space, and has a diverse engine lineup, available in gas or hybrid options, including the powerful 362-horsepower Hybrid Max. Plus, available all-wheel drive means you'll have confidence no matter where life takes you. Ready to take on your dreams? The Grand Highlander is more than a vehicle. It's your partner in embracing all life throws at you. From daily routines to unexpected adventures, it's up for every grand challenge. Learn more at toyota.com/grandhighlander. Toyota, let's go places.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're taking a break from the lore to do something I want to do. They were telling stories of many times GW rules writers just went hog wild on an idea, and it turned out to be completely terrible for everyone and kind of ruined the game.
Kind of? Seventh edition? Cough, cough?
Second edition, sixth edition. I mean, look, my thing is, at the time, these things were incredibly painful, but looking back on them, some of them are genuinely hilarious.
Second edition was always hilarious.
Even the seventh edition, we look back on it.
Second edition was hilarious when you were playing. Seventh edition was not hilarious when you were playing.
Oh, no, not at all. But I like it. And we're going to get there because there's so much lore behind their decisions. They actually make complete sense. It's just that they forgot how this game is played. So, all right. But before we begin, as always, please comment and like on the cast. It does help us out a lot with our algorithms. It pushes us out really far. So if you could do it. Secondly, you can either go to we have a website, the40klorecast.com. On that website, there's links to our merchandise if you'd like to purchase some, a link to our Discord, a link to our Patreon, and
No, screw this. You don't do this.
What?
I want everybody to know, and this is shameless promoting, but our gear is like super high quality, and I was super surprised when I got my first
set. So we actually don't make very much money on our merchandise, and the reason why is I absorbed the cost of actually having quality. So the sweatshirts are soft, the hats are soft, the shirts are soft. The goal is to actually have some.
They're legit. They are legit, though. I need to throw that out there because people think they're going to get some random shit.
Let me just figure it out.
Fine. I mean, they wear them. I think they're awesome.
I got a bunch of it. It's comfy. All right. But with that, on the website or actually even in the show notes here, you can see a link to our Discord. It's a place, especially with this topic at hand, I invite many people to come into. It's always there. It's as we've mentioned before, it's a spot for 40K lore, for gaming, painting, video games, more. But especially on this one, if you're not a member of the Discord, please join. If you are, please just make comments about which rules we glossed over, because we may end up doing more of these casts if people like it. Every time I mention Discord too, big shout out Kevin, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David. Those are our mods, and they're why we actually have a Discord today, because if they weren't here, I would have deleted it. I'm not managing 5,000 people. Second to last, shout out again to Hatch Brewing. This stuff is amazing. Thank you again. Anyone looking for whiskeys and bourbon, Hatch Brewing, I find it delicious. So lastly, though, coaching. This entire cast is talking about how the tabletop is broken, and every single thing we're going to discuss here and its brokenness, Brad played. So he's very aware of how to play this game, even when it borders on cheating.
You want to find rules as intended?
Yeah. Rules as intended, not Brad. Rules as written, Brad.
Boom.
And in fact, actually, sorry, I almost let you get it without shouting your email out.
Oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
Or to go to our website or our Discord and reach him there.
I don't think I'm ever going to get out of that.
Yeah, emails him. So let's dive into this because this is a topic I just really do love and I'm sorry. So main thing is, why do rules break? So before we begin, we have to talk about something in the gaming community knows is RAW, for rules as written. What this means is that if the rule book says something, then that's the rule. If it's misspelled, then do the misspelled thing.
Like, well, here's the thing on this too. We give GW shit, but
Has this problem. This is not a GW problem.
Well, I'm just saying that it's also, we have a harder time than, like, say, a card game or something. This is why you get, give me the setup for rules on this. We have got 27 factions that have 4 to 8 detachments per, that all have different interactions on the board.
Yeah.
And then you have different, you know, the different rules.
And then you have the core rules of the game on top of it.
Right.
And then. So the 40K rule book is not a condensed document.
No. And it's also, you got to remember, this is a game that was set up to be a beer and pretzel game. You and your friends in the basement, wherever, playing. I mean, the size of the table right now is because it's the average size of a dining room table in the UK.
It was, yeah. The size was. It's not anymore. That's the thing. So, so rules as written means that whatever is written down is there. And this creates a conflict. So something else called rules as intended. And rules as intended means, you know, what you'd think it is. It's like, well, I see that this is misspelled, but I know they intended to do this. The conflict between these two is the bane of existence for rules writers and event coordinators. And the reason why is that you're hosting an event for, I would say, hundreds, maybe dozens of people. You can't let each and every one of them interpret the rules as they see fit, because first off, you know, they may not agree. And I'm not even calling people being jerks here. I'm just saying, in a rational setting, if you're playing rules as intended, what happens oftentimes is two people may agree to something.
They might disagree.
Yeah. But those people, even if they agree, may then go to play their next game against someone who disagrees. And it creates this kind of unfair is probably the best way to explain it. It actually does create an unfair scenario. So what we have to do is we have to play the game with rules as written. And the next piece to that rules as written is the way GW writes the rules, and almost every game state does this, is what's called a permissive rule set, which means if the rule says you can do something, you can do that. And you can only do it if the rule book says it, as opposed to a prohibitive rule set where it just whatever, unless it says you can't, you can. And that just is anarchy.
That's a disaster. Yeah,
it's like it doesn't exist that way. So the biggest complaints 40K gets, and GW gets, in my mind, unfair grief on this, because you'll see I'm covering here, they made mistakes, but they came from good places. What people give them grief because they have to write something what is played rules as written, and it has to be in a permissive rule set, which means if the interaction is busted and the rules are no good, that's that. But so
let's talk about what they're doing good, though, because from the dark ages of 40K, they actually went really good, gone back and doing things. Because for a long time, in the beginning, they were very up to date. They didn't change things that fast, but they were involved in the community. And then they went away onto the top of Mount Olympus. And if you got a codex...
Let me say that better, because that's going to confuse everybody. So 30 years old. All right. In the 30 years, GW would just do this thing where they would release it. They weren't a big company. They were a small company with a small player base. So there wasn't much of a need. And this is the basics of things that have with capitalism all the time. They made a game, people played the game, and they kind of like, oh, well, just we'll release, you know, one codex every few years, and that'll give them all the rules that they need. Then all of a sudden that game becomes played by millions of people. And the demands and the attention gets a lot nastier and a lot bigger. And so what happens is in its current state, GW's done a great job where within 3 months, sometimes even less, they're taking corrective action.
Yeah, and they're involved. They hear the player, they feedback,
right,
and they make changes. And whether you like them or not, they're trying to better the game.
They're doing their best. For a long period of time, they weren't doing this because
they're off fifth, sixth, even seventh edition.
Yeah, I mean, I would say one through seven. And some of those actually resulted.
In the very, very beginning, it was a little different just because of the fact that they had...
No one played.
Well, but you also had the Outrider team and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you did have... And also, they were more...
It at least felt like somebody...
And they were more can use White Dwarf at that point, too.
Right.
Kind of to fix
problems. They would just put out something in White Dwarf. And then we got the fifth, sixth, and seventh edition. And you went, hey, this codex is broken. They went, okay, well, you'll get another one. And... A couple years.
Yeah. I mean, what ended up happening, unfortunately, during that era, which is I view as a dark era, which, candidly, I didn't play during. I played was like, you know, maybe once a year.
Never stopped them a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, during that era. Because it was just such a mess. And like I did no tournaments for almost probably 15 years. Because the tournaments would then have to add their own rules and rule clarifications, and it got, you know.
Shout out to FLG at the time. They kept the tournament scene running.
They did. They saved it. But there was also weird stuff. Like, they banned Forge World models, which on the one hand, I understand. But someone spent like $400 on something and got told you can never use it.
True. Ever. But the problem was that they didn't have a living document at the time. So you would have this grainy printout of some rules that looked like they were written in crayon.
Yeah, that's true. It got ugly. But anyway, like we said, this is a lot of everything. The good news is everything we're talking about is the past.
Some ancient past, actually. 10 years.
I mean, really?
Ish.
10 years. I mean, I just want to point out. What was the rule that allowed my knights to see at anything?
Towering. No,
towering.
The beginning of tenth was a trash fight.
Okay, so these things happen. But the good news.
I refuse to acknowledge this because 10th didn't start until the first day of Slate.
There we go. All right. So let's go down memory lane. And I just want some of our listeners to understand that I know a good number of our listener base doesn't play the game or plays the game very casually. There are things we're going to talk about here that there are other listeners are going to hear this and they're going to put their head in their hands, remembering some horrible stuff they had to deal with or was done, you know, or some horrible things that they did. And they just have pure shame over it. Brad is one of them. And, my laughter here in some places also comes from a damaged place. There are some things here that were just, they were hilarious. But anyway, but again, pop into the Discord, leave a comment on the cast on some of this stuff. If you like this episode, we will do more of them, but I'm letting everyone decide. So let's open with one of the ones that I just do not understand why it took six editions. Pre-measuring. So
I love every part about that.
So 40K is played with two things, a tape measure and dice. Every unit in the game has a distance it can move. It can move. There's some variance there, obviously. And, you know, everything also has a range to everything it can shoot. So there's a number written down, and it says this is how far your gun can shoot. For 25 years of this game, I was not allowed to check the distance.
Until after you declared
it. After I declared I shot.
And so also... you know what? Screw this. I'm going to tell you about how abusive everybody
was. This was horrifying.
So ready? I'm going to move my unit, and it moves 6 inches, and I'm going to shoot in a minute. So I take out my tape measure, and I put about 30 inches of tape out, and then I move my thing 6 inches, and I see how far John is away.
Yeah. People cheated like crazy on this. But the idea here was the concept was funny where I'd move my unit 6 inches and then I'd say, I'm going to shoot that thing. And then we would discover together if I was in range of that thing. The idea I think was that, well, in combat, you really don't have a chance to check ranges, except in the lore, that ability is written into the Space Marine helmet.
It's part of everybody.
Everyone's got this. It's 38,000 years in the future. Despite the stupid horses, we've advanced. And so this thing was, oh God, I hated this rule so much. And to Brad's point, everyone cheated or got cheated by it. There was no one playing this thing.
That was the problem, is you were playing within the rules because you had to measure to see how far you could go.
Yeah, but the trick of putting your tape measure out. The other one I would see is, but people would call you out on that, so you couldn't do it. So then I would see people who would lean on the board and they'd put their forearm down, and they knew how long their forearm was. You'd see guys just kind of like wandering. Like people would do all this weird stuff with their hands. Let's start it with,
to be fair, first one of the day. It was super easy if you knew math, though, because you knew that certain things on the board were at certain distances.
Yeah.
So you just made the triangle and just you knew exactly where you were going, how far you were.
My favorite part, though, it was actually that when this rule went away, and I had to look this up because I had a memory of it. But again, I wasn't playing in sixth edition when this rule went away.
It took forever.
At the start of sixth edition, they changed it. And GW said, look, they realized it was actually because a different game system did this first. It was War Machine Horde did it first. And they said, we're going to allow you to pre-measure. And people lost their minds over that. Not in a good way.
It's going to be so long.
It's going to ruin everything. It's going to ruin the game. The game's going to be... I looked this up online and found the old posts. Some people saying, like, this is a skill they're taking out of the game. It's not a skill. It's going to make the game take away.
Also, they put in a skill because pre-measuring makes you precise.
Yeah. Well, the part I like more, people saying it's going to make the game take longer. It actually made the game take significantly less time. Yeah. Because all the arguing and all the gamesmanship went away. It was really quick and easy to play the game.
Let me talk about guests, my friends.
All right, but no, that's yes.
They make me happy.
Let's go into the next one. The loss of guest weapons, not goss weapons, guests, as in I'm guessing, is a bit sad.
So, first off, you had artillery basically,
mm-hmm.
and you would guess how far you're shooting.
Yeah, I have to shoot out of line of sight. But this was the whole idea behind a guest weapon was someone firing a mortar. Someone firing something like that, they don't actually know. Sometimes you just got to fire quick. They might not know the distance. So the idea was, what GW accounted for that with, was they called these things guess weapons, where you had to guess the distance. So as opposed to like not being allowed to measure, I'd actually guess how far we are apart.
And you would see who paid attention using A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
Yeah.
Because you have people that could laser sight it. It was pretty easy.
But let's talk about how the way guess weapons worked. Guess weapons were awesome because what you would do is you would say, all right, I'm going to fire 27 inches. And then you'd measure out 27 inches and put a marker down. Pretty easy, right? No. Now we're going to add in something else called scatter dice, which scatter dice are a really cool concept and basically
it
was a fist fight. A scatter dice is a six-sided die that has an arrow on each side.
Except for two hits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Where there were two hits.
Four arrows.
Yeah, four arrows and two hits. But what you're supposed to do then is you roll your scatter dice and it gives you a direction. And then you roll a d6 and it gives you a distance. Then you would move your template in that direction, that distance. It was thematic. It was fun. And a lot of time, and when played on a casual setting, created some really hilarious interactions. Now, played on a competitive setting, like certain people in this room, it was actually abusive and horrible.
Because it wasn't trying to abuse you. No one would ever agree what the angle.
Well, because what someone would do is instead of rolling the dice next, and there's a lot of reasons why
you didn't want to roll on people's models. That's a real thing.
That's the problem. And that was the thing. I would guess it perfectly, and I'd have it, and I would say it's right on top of this model here. But I couldn't roll a dice in that area, so I had to roll a dice a foot away.
A lot more, to be honest.
And that, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that dice is pointing in a direction. So then I have to bring out like a protractor to figure out what direction it was. This was argument central. This is the real reason why these things had to go away.
Oh, 100%. It was just so annoying because
it was nonstop arguing.
And you're just like, because a lot of times it would determine how the game's going. Because also a lot of those artillery weapons were big damage.
Oh, that's the thing. That was the problem is that these things... The one mistake that GW really had in my mind in this early era was that these ideas were fun. The idea of guess weapons, scatter dice, is a fun concept. A lot of stuff we're going to talk about here are fun concepts. But because of the way the rules were written on some of these weapons, the effects were so catastrophic, they were game-changing, which creates a impetus for argument. So that's why the scatter dice... But it would happen where... You would roll a dice, or you would guess your weapon perfectly, and you'd nail it, and then you'd roll a guess weapon, and you'd roll a weird direction and a six, and you would hit your own models. Or, as Brad said, you could sit there and cheat the system by saying, "Well, you're not allowed to target my character because he's protected," and I would just oopsies miss something else, and then drop an artillery shell on top of your captain and kill him.
Especially when you got the walk templates over, if you're
wrong. Oh, yeah, I forgot about the walk templates. I mean, this was GW, that's going to be the theme of this episode. GW having a really fun idea that people like Brad ruined.
I was more rules intended, but thank you very much.
All right, now let's go into one, though, that I really do miss, and I wish they would back.
I hate this so much.
That's how you know it's a good rule, because Brad, the competitive player, hated it, and I think it's awesome. Custom vehicles.
Oh my God.
This was awesome. So early Warhammer was written by a bunch of friends who were just basically messing around. And they spent time thinking up just fun lore ideas and turned them into tabletop rules. The problem is that there's created kind of a bit of a mix of players who are playing the game between competitive and this will be funny.
You had two wildly opposed inside GW rules teams.
Yes. And so GW inside the rules team every now and then would come up with something that was just so outlandish and stupid that everyone liked it except for the competitive player base, who then would either rebel against it or would try to use it to break the game.
Wildly abuse it.
Yeah. So we'll talk in 2001, GW had released, I think it was the first ever chapter approved.
Out of the White Dwarfs.
Otherwise, so they had a bunch of weird rules in it.
And the White Dwarf, for everybody, is their monthly magazine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My favorite part is in this, there was a rule set for creating your own vehicles. That's it. You could custom build, and we use this kit bash, which is a term for like taking multiple like kits, some models or you know,
just making them a Frankenstein.
Yeah. And allowing you to create a custom new model for yourself to use in your army that was legal on a tournament. There were no real restrictions, just costs. There was nothing nothing you couldn't do.
The drop pods you did. With just G.I. Joes on the top of them, yeah. With guns.
Well, people converted over. I mean, I distinctly remember seeing whatever the Thundercats vehicle was, that thing was converted over. This was awesome. You had Power Rangers, Tonka trucks, you name it. Well, go online.
Build yourself Tyranids were bananas.
Oh, build yourself Tyranids. You also had people using it, but and there were some things that were fun. People used like deodorant or toilet paper rolls, but it was all really well painted. Some of the stuff looked really good. That being said, the people who played it competitively just tried to create the Dr. Strangelove Doomsday Machine.
Oh, for sure. You had, is anything undercosted or can I break the game? Because a lot of these weapons are meant to be one. You're supposed to have one big cannon on your thing.
We're going to get to one of my favorites in a minute. But so to Brad's point, what you had was you just had a chart. And the chart had weapons on it. It had size of unit. It had armor ratings, all those things. And whatever you chose, it added points. You also even had one that had enhancements on it. So I could pick a weapon and then I could make it a mega weapon, which would increase its strength and damage.
Also,
I could
make it hit.
Yeah, I could make a Gatling. My favorite one I saw of all of these was a 9D cannon tank. A D cannon is a weapon the Eldar use that shoots a hole in the materium to the immaterium.
You break reality.
Yeah. If you shot 9 of these at something, you would effectively create a mini Eye of Terror.
Also, yes, that was one of them. Oh, there's no other thing in the game that had more than one.
Yeah, someone made one with 9. The other part was they had this really enjoyable scale. And the scale was small, normal, war machine. Small had a definition of being, I think it was around the size of like a biker. Normal was about the size of a rhino.
So it went all the way up to like almost, I think I'm Lehman Ross.
Yeah, Lehman Ross. And then war machine had no cap. It actually called out in the article, if you want to glue 4 chimeras together to make a super chimera, you could do that. I should also note at this era in the game, terrain wasn't very dense.
It wasn't very dense. It was non-existent.
So if you put a model the size of, what was a G.I. Joe plane called? Whatever that thing was. You put that on the board, it could drive around. I think this is the golden age of the game. Of gaming.
This was the golden age of gaming.
I mean, you would have vehicles with 14 armor, the highest value, with some sort of like Imperial Field or Eldar shapes, Void Shields, and every gun that ever existed, and they just plant it on the table.
Well, that was also back in the day when if you were Eldar, you could do you could have your save, you had your armor value, you had an invulnerable save, and then you had your it wasn't dodge. It was
like a flicker.
Displacement like something like that.
Yeah.
You just had a 50% chance.
To just deflect the shot.
It just didn't hit you, period.
It was a golden era. And the orc players this time put some stuff out there.
Oh, man. The custom stompas were just bananas.
Custom stompas. It was beautiful. The custom rigs, the custom trucks. The orc players probably had the most fun with this rule. But competitive players complained.
Also, remember the old stomper rule. So the old Stompa rule was you could keep firing until you rolled doubles.
Yeah.
So you would put all of the guns that did that, and then you would just keep firing infinitely until you got a doubles on the number of shots.
Yeah.
That was bananas.
It was a great era. It was just a great era. And we don't get to have fun things anymore.
I do miss templates.
Yeah, so...
I don't miss indirect and DV die, but I like templates quite a bit.
That is a statement only made by competitive players.
Because it's nice, because it punished you for clumping up all your guys.
It didn't. It made everyone yell at each other, and it's why I walked away from the game for a while.
Flamer templates were fantastic.
Every template sucked, and I'll explain why. All right, so you hear why we're arguing. So up until 2016, a lot of the weapons in the game carried what was called a template. These were just shapes. And you would hold the shape out from your unit, and the shape like a flamethrower. It had a conical shape, and anything that fell under that cone was considered hit by the flamethrower. You had circle ones for missiles and mortars and all these things. They were horrible. They were a terrible idea,
awesome.
And they made the game worse because it was a nonstop argument. Because, for example, what angle of the model do I take the template out of for a flamer?
The best one.
Yeah. If it worked well for me, I would be holding the template out of the guy holding the flamethrower's elbow.
You remember when they had torrent flamers where you place the wherever you wanted?
I do. It was horrible. Templates, the concept of a template makes a lot of sense in a wargaming world. The idea is I've fired a missile at you. It has a 3-inch explosion. Therefore, put this template down. Everything within 3 inches explodes.
I do miss a little bit competitively, and I understand that it was an argument on it. But I love the fact that if I had a bunch of template weapons in my army, you would have to spread out your deployment.
Which made everyone's movement phase take way longer than it should. The entire game was slower and more sweaty because the consequences were so extreme. Right now, I can move 10 models in about 2 seconds. I don't care.
You're not wrong.
And what happened was before, if I did that, I would lose the game because someone would just go template, 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 over. And so people's movement phases, I do believe when we got rid of templates, so in 8th edition, right? Because if it went away in 8th edition, how much faster was the movement phase? You played from 7th right into 8th. How much faster was deployment and movement?
The 7th to 8th was so much better.
That's the point. It's because you pulled away a punishment that was a stupid punishment in my mind. I know people will disagree with me, and I understand why you feel that way. You're right. It is silly that someone could bunch a bunch of models up, and then you shoot them with a piece of artillery and only hits one guy. I get that. I understand that.
I get what you're saying on it because it's mechanically easier. It just makes more. I like the feel of
it, the templates. I will give it the templates make more sense. The issue is just what they did to the experience playing the game was so negative. I'm really glad they're gone. Okay. But I didn't bring them up for that. I brought them because what we have to talk to next, which is when GW decided to give random things a pocket nuke. Second edition. Oh, okay. So
void grenades.
We're just doing virus grenades.
All of them have the same type of thing.
They did. So in the Horus Heresy episodes, we talked about virus bombs, where it converts all organic matter into methane and then ignites it. But these were like orbital bombs. This is what, you know, Flight of the Eisenstein, all this stuff was around this. What if instead of that, it was like the holy hand grenade of Antioch and could be thrown at an opponent? And right now, there are veteran players who are shifting uncomfortably in their chairs as they remember.
It's so annoying.
They know where I'm going with this. This is, again, GW having a really fun lore idea. And the idea is, I'm going to, you know, if you really have to kill something, why wouldn't you throw a virus bomb at it? It would then kill that thing. It could even spread to the other things around it and could kill everything around it. What a really good weapon. Does it match the GW lore?
Yep. Yes.
And so the way that this thing functioned was you put a template down and you rolled a D6 for anything that was under that template. Anytime you roll a 3 or higher, that model dies, which is annoying, but cool. It's a very powerful grenade. That wasn't the end of it though.
Because it spread.
What then happens is for every model that died, you would roll another D6. And whatever that distance was, you'd put another template down. And anything that was in that new template had to roll a D6. And every 4 up, this time, so instead of a 3 out of 6, which is a 66% chance, on a 50-50 chance, this thing would then die.
You lose your whole army.
Oh, I'm not. It gets worse. If it died, you continue the process. So if you put to what we were talking about templates, a large number of units near each other, and one of these grenades were to hit it, you could lose your entire army. The good news about that is that very few models in the game had virus grenades, and it was a very short distance. I think grenades, like
grenades are super short.
It's like three or six inches. It was nothing. Like whatever threw the grenade usually died as a result of this. Which again, lore specific, awesome, totally support it, except for one small little problem. What? All right, this is fun. Second edition, GW thought of this really great way to kind of spice the game up. And the way they spiced the game up is that you'd had these cards that you'd have with you. And before the game, you'd draw, I think it was just one card each, right?
Yeah, unless you were a couple characters, could have two.
Right, but you'd have a card each. And these cards, they were random. And they had little tricks that would kind of affect the game. And they were funny. Like the one of the ones I liked was, it was called Look Out, Sir. Where if one of your characters died, you'd play the card and a model near your character would jump in front of the attack and sacrifice themselves. Or reinforcements, which allowed you to bring a dead unit back.
Stupid card.
That one caused some problems because it just said unit. So I could bring back.
At the time you anything. Had things like the Space Wolf Terminator Squad, which was the entirety of your army. You had one unit.
Yeah, you had one unit. And you play
that card and it comes back.
It came right back. So that was pretty game-breaking. Bombing Run, where you just drop the template on the enemy.
Roll per armor, per unit.
Yeah.
Now, talk about grenades, though. The Void Grenade, because it stayed on the table.
Oh, I forgot about the Void Grenade. Yeah, you threw a Void Grenade.
It killed. If it hit anything under the template, it was just dead.
Yeah, and if anything moved through that template, it died.
It also died. And the grenade, it would be a small template. And every turn, it would move D6 in a random direction.
Yeah.
And it never went away. So you had to run away from this.
You had to run away from this thing. There was
hair in the warp. Yeah. It was, ugh.
Why are you mad about that? That's again, why don't we have this anymore? That's a wonder. That should be one of the mission cards in 10th
edition. I've had to flee that so many times. That was continued on. That was in 3rd and 4th edition. Yeah,
and my point is that we should bring that back in 10th. I'm fine with it. That's going to be one of the mission rules. There's a void. Someone, we call it oopsie. Someone dropped a void grenade. Let's bring this thing back.
You know how bad that would, like people would flame up if in the middle of a major finals, it's just determined because a void grenade just continued.
What you just described to me is how I think every major super major should end. What's the last mission? Void grenade mission. No.
Just keeps diving into the same guy.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Oh. Just the tournament has to. The tournament would provide its own scatter dice for it. Just we put it.
That was pretty funny.
You do realize I'm going to do that now. Right? I'm just letting you know. Like Brad and I were discussing at lunch. Like maybe you should put on an event. Congratulations. I'm bringing back the void grenade.
I'm bringing it back. All right,
but let's get to the real problem here. One of the cards, the aforementioned card, was called Virus Outbreak. And the virus outbreak allowed you to drop a virus grenade
anywhere on the board,
including on turn one before your opponent had moved.
Also, the deployment zone, we have all kinds of different deployment zones.
Oh, there were three then.
Well, the main, you just played 12 inches up.
Yeah, that was it. And I like this. So
at the time, orcs were bringing 150 models.
Yeah.
We're all stuffed. If you were an orc player
and your opponent pulled virus outbreak, you lost the game on the first turn. Unless you brought loaded dice.
Yeah.
That's the only way. Like, and weirdly, you brought loaded dice that rolled ones and twos.
you have to use my dice.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why I have these.
I know they look like D4s, but they're not.
Yeah. Entire armies were wiped out. People, I mean, there's numerous people losing 70%+ of their army before they started the game. This was such a problem. And remember, this is also a time before, like, we had websites. This is the early zeros. So you have websites, but people aren't really going to them very much. There's no social media. Ooh, what a horrible time. But anyway, so GW does the only thing they could think to do, which was in the White Dwarf, they told everyone to go find their virus outbreak card.
To tear them up.
Yeah, tear it into pieces.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
We're not making this up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They told everyone, go find your virus outbreak card.
We're not paraphrasing that. Yeah. They actually said, tear the card into little pieces and throw it in the garbage.
Yeah. I love them, man. I don't know. I think it's cool. Go GW. All right, let's go with another one that's got some interesting history to it. Instant Death.
Saga of the Bear.
Yeah. Instant Death probably should come back. It was actually a pretty cool rule, but I get why it's gone. Because it's very thematic.
It would be so much more damaging now because people didn't have very many wounds back in the day.
Well, yeah.
Now you have characters with 10 wounds.
But it's still, the idea of instant death was if a volcano lance from a knight, which didn't exist back then, interestingly enough, shot a guardsman. There's no save. The guardsman.
No, instant death wasn't no save. Instant death was if the damage from the weapon was double your toughness.
Strength. If the strength
of the weapon was double your toughness, then if you failed your save, you died.
Was it failure save or if it successfully wounded?
Nope. There was two. Well, there was weapons that don't have a save.
That's why.
The rule itself was if the weapon was double your toughness, the strength of the weapon was double your toughness, it didn't matter. If you had 6 wounds and the weapon did 1 damage, you died.
Yeah. That also never happened where it did 1. There was no strength 20 gone that did 1 damage.
Sure. But the thing is there wasn't that many multi-damage weapons back in the day.
That's true. Yeah. The idea was to make up for the fact that, taking a las cannon to the face as a guardsman.
Well, it was terrifying because a lot of your characters at the time had 3-4 wounds.
Yeah.
And most everything was doing 1 damage. But if you got hit by a power fist, for say,
oh yeah,
you would just die.
And I love this rule because it was thematic. Unfortunately, players picked up pretty quickly on, I need to make sure I carry as many instant death weapons as possible, namely Meltas and Power Fists.
Yep, because they would double that up. So you'd go into Eldrad and go, hey, heard you were T3. Don't care how many wounds you got. Bing!
Yeah, and punch him in the face. Which, to be fair, I can't say as well as you can, if a Terminator captain with a Power Fist were to punch a 10,000-year-old Eldar in the face.
I mean, let's be honest.
With the Power Fist.
Thunderhammer at the time.
Yeah, but still, I feel like it's okay to say, I feel like the Eldar would die.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big weapon.
Like, it's just thematically, I'm like, okay, yeah, this las cannon shot a space marine. Yeah, the space marine's dead, guys.
And then you would bring a lot of things that could try to snipe out characters by double...
Yeah, this is where it started to fell apart. And what broke the game a little bit, though, is that characters in this era were more important than they are now.
Oh, wildly. They also weren't attached to...
Yeah, and the game used to have a term called Hero Hammer. People would try to play what was called Hero Hammer by bringing as many characters as they possibly could because they were such incredible force multipliers.
And they were also, like, wildly more damaging.
Yeah, and so the issue is that with this instant death, you could take them out pretty... I'm going to go with easily. I'm saying that in quotations.
They started giving what's called Eternal Warrior.
Yeah. Which
they had different things. Saga of the Bear, which was the Space Wolf one.
Yep.
They had different characters that you could give them an enhancement, and it said that you just didn't die.
Which you never, from a rules writing standpoint, you never want to start doing. Once you say, hey, here's a rule, here's an ability, but it doesn't affect these things and these things, it tends to fall apart, and that's what happens. The rule eventually died off because... the number one reason you'd use it, you could never use it. Or more annoyingly, some armies had access to a way to block instant death and other armies did not, which became kind of an unfair situation. So,
well, I love the fact that they gave away so many things.
Yeah.
What was it? What was the Salamander rule? We won't even bother with their armor. That they, you couldn't get double penetration on them.
Oh, yeah, because their armor was so, yeah. I mean, again, the lore there was correct. So, eventually the rule died off. Speaking of things that died off, I'm going to tell you guys a fun story about summoning demons.
Tell you who's the best at it.
So in early 7th edition, which is where this was the funniest moment, they changed the way the psychic worked a little bit. And you've always been able to... summoning demons has been part of the game, I think, from almost every edition. There's different mechanics they've used over the era. But in 7th edition, which is considered the most balanced edition of the game, it was 3 years of celebration that just came to a crashing halt in 2017 with the horrible release of 8th edition, taking away everyone's good times. I'm actually kidding. Like, for those who don't know, like, numerous players quit the game in 7th edition, and a lot of them didn't return until near the end of 8th edition because they were so damaged.
Such a fire.
Yes, 7th edition had some interesting problems, and to be fair, they were all lore-driven ideas that were ruined by rules as written because of the way things are. I'm not going to give GW that much grief about this because none of this was done with malintention except for maybe the Eldar Codex. That one. Yeah. All right. So this change of psychic powers meant that, you know, you roll dice when you do a psychic power and determine, and the dice determine what you can pull off. The harder the thing to pull off, the higher the dice roll you have to have. Because if I have to roll over a 4, for example, on 2 dice, it's like a 70% chance. But if to roll over a 10, it's like a 4% chance. And not that
like you use multiple dice. The thing is then they went to, needed X amount of successes.
Yeah. I don't want to get too far into the complication of it, but effectively to do any psychic power, the more complicated the power,
the more dice
you had to have, and the higher the numbers you have to achieve. Right. So what this idea behind this is correct. Only the most powerful psychers can pull off the most challenging feats. One of these feats you could pull off was summoning a demon to fight in the board with you.
Also talk about summoning back then. So summoning back in this edition, mm-hmm. right now you can summon things, but you have to already have paid for them.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a flaw there in this one.
In summoning, you summoned extra stuff to the board.
Yeah.
It did not cost points. People would show up in their summoning armies, which we're going into, with an entire tray of extra shit. Yeah. They have another army, basically.
Yeah, you're playing a game of 2,000 points against 2,000 points. They would have 2,000 points plus 1,000 offboard in case their dice went well.
Yeah.
And the idea of summoning is awesome. The concept was, you know, I am a chaos sorcerer. I'm moving up the board. I'm successfully defeating, you know, the Imperium. I'm going to summon in some pink horrors, some plague bearers, maybe even a bloodthirster to join me in my battle. This makes sense. And to make it work, it gets better. To make it work, what GW did was, you know, the bigger the summoning you had to do, the higher the dice roll. So, that being said, there was a little bit of an oopsie done, just a tiny oopsie, in which when they did the oopsie, they didn't specify who could or could not summon things.
Because there was a couple charts. You could take spells from different things and everybody had access to them.
All of the charts.
Initially, yeah. But GW went, well, no one's going to take summoning because if you weren't a demon summoner, you could take damage. You could kill yourself from summoning because you did that. And then you went into Eldar.
Yeah. And so this is where this gets to be fun. The more gifted the psyker, the easier it was to pull off a summon. And who are the two most gifted psykers in the galaxy?
Eldar and the Grey Knights.
So as a result, you would routinely see on the board Eldar Farseers summoning demons of Slaanesh.
So many keepers.
Just keepers of secrets. And then you also saw Grey Knights fighting side by side with
hordes of demons.
Yeah. let's just say you can, if you don't believe me, go online. You can find the people raging about this on Daka Daka.
Anytime you had a game streamed, it was just bananas.
People were furious about this. And to their credit, GW rules writers did address this later by changing.
They didn't even realize it until they went to some of the bigger tournaments and just went, what are you doing? Yeah.
And I want to point out, some of the GW rules writers are some of the biggest fluff bunnies out there. So imagine, like, you wrote these rules, you're super proud of yourself, it's a new edition, you go to, you know, Warhammer Fest or whatever you're going to, and you walk past the board and you see a Grey Knight player rolling dice and then adding chaos demons to their army and just going, oh my God, what have I done?
And you go to the next table, and the Eldar person is summoning hordes of Slaanesh.
Yeah. It's like, no, I genuinely believe that, like, there were lots of people screaming into hotel pillows as they got back to their room later that night of, like, what have I done? It could get fixed, but solid oopsie. But that wasn't our only 7th edition oopsie. One of the great gems.
I don't even want to talk about this.
Why? Because you did this?
How much? Everyone did this.
Yeah, way to blame. Yeah.
This is the worst rule.
Yeah. I do like that all of your defenses are the Lemmings defense.
We all jumped off.
We all jumped off the cliff. All right. We're going to talk about invisibility, the Harry Potter of 40K.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantan products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
For what appears to be, to me, no reason whatsoever, GW added a spell of invisibility to the game.
Let's go with what happened. 7th edition just started. There was a couple of weird things, but they really had fixed 7th or 6th.
Yeah.
They cleaned up a lot of stuff. And then GW did put out some books that had the most amazing lore that I've ever read. Gathering Storm.
Yep.
Had its great plot. There was a great story. And in each one of the books, there was, wow, we just jumped the shark, and you thought they couldn't get any worse. And they were like, hold my beer. I've got something else. So what you had is invisibility. The spell came from one of the broken psyche charts. Invisibility said, if I cast this power, you can only hit me on a 6, period.
Actually, I want to call this out. You can't hit me on a 6. What it said was you can only perform a snapshot at me.
That's true.
Which is stolen from XCOM. For those of you who remember our Tau episodes, this is stolen from XCOM.
This is the biggest thing, because that you clarified that one, because a snapshot did not allow you to fire anything that was a template. So if somebody invisible was in front of me and I had 10 flamers, I could not flame right in front of me.
I cannot use a flamethrower to hit the thing that's moving in front of me. It's invisible. I have to use a pistol.
Yep. So I couldn't even fire those weapons.
Yeah.
The combo was, they also had another psyche chart with that that said, you get to reroll your save. Oh, and they also had guys that had a 2-up save. So I could only be hit on 6s. I had a 2-up save that I rerolled. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that I could bring a couple guys with me that were my hounds.
Yeah, so let's do this. Let's just work with the math here. So I roll a D6. I have to, my 6 chances, I have 1 in 6 chance to hit them. I get a normal chance to wound, which is maybe 3 out of 4 out of 6 chance. Maybe.
If I'm they were lucky. Also toughness 5.
Yeah. Then my opponent gets to roll, and all I have to roll is not a 1. And if they do roll a 1, they get to try again.
And if they fail that, then they can pass that off to a 4-point model that came along with it.
Yeah, I don't know people complain about 7th edition. It sounds fun.
One of my favorite stories ever is I walk into an RTT, and a guy's about to play. He's playing against the Thunderwolf Star, what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
And he's trying to explain invisibility and that saves. And the guy pulls out his phone, pops out his calculator, and goes, so I need to shoot you 400 and blah, blah, blah times to do 1 wound? He goes, nah. Shakes his hand and goes, I'll just go get some food.
I'm going to get food and a beer.
Yeah, so this sounds awful.
Let's just say when the rules of 8th edition were released and invisibility was no longer part of it, people weren't upset. All right. But now I want to talk about another fun fluff idea that totally fell apart. So Dangerous Terrain.
I love Dangerous Terrain. Dangerous Terrain, take that back.
It's a really fun idea because, look, in the grim, dark future, there's only war, which means there's only rubble in the battlefield. And also, apparently, razor wire, rivers and lakes, remember amphibious vehicles?
Yes.
That was
also, I played on the lava board. You know, I'm telling that story.
What?
So, Dangerous Terrain, okay? Dangerous Terrain on the board would be something that if you touched it or you went through it, you could either be immobilized if you were a vehicle or take damage. You would
die.
Your models would either die. Infantry would just, based on a, I can't even remember what the roll was.
It was a one.
One.
So So Dangerous Terrain was whenever you had to cross Dangerous Terrain, you had to roll a dice. If you rolled anything but a one, sometimes had other pieces, but for most part, if you anything but a one, you're fine. But if you rolled a one, you died.
Yeah. And then the vehicles would take a hit on its rear armor, which is always your worst armor.
Yeah.
And you could possibly get blown up from that. GW had a couple beautiful boards at the 2001 and 2002 Grand Tournament Circuit. Yes, I'm old. And I'm playing an all combat army. I'm playing World Eaters.
Yep.
And I played two tournaments in a row where I played 5 out of 6 of my games on lava boards, which were all Dangerous Terrain. And I was running.
Yes. Across the lava.
Across the lava.
The idea of Dangerous Terrain, actually, it was kind of a nice way to spice the game up a little bit. It was fun. The thing was, is that like Brad said, like vehicles, walkers, bikes, they wouldn't die on a one, but you know what would? A Terminator who's crossing, and I'm not joking, a piece that was Dangerous Terrain was razor wire. So a Terminator in Ceramite armor would die stepping over razor wire.
Remember... grab tanks, things that flew through the air, would have to roll a Dangerous Terrain check and they could get immobilized. I've watched multiple people immobilize their army on turn one, trying to fly through forests and just going
and accidentally hitting the tree.
Because you would roll as soon as you hit it. So if the forest was 2 inches ahead of you and you rolled the one, you would stop.
You had to stop at 2 inches.
Yeah, exactly. And then you stayed there the rest of the game. Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention that if you had a forest, you could only see in or out of it 2 inches. So if you were at the back of the forest, you couldn't see anything the rest
and
of the game.
And the opponent would just move around you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, cool. I'm glad that you put another piece of terrain out.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, these were at least they had terrain rules. We didn't have, how many years did we go without terrain rules? 15?
Awesome.
As a result of this? Yeah. There also was a rule just real quick called amphibious because they used to have water on the board. And guards specifically would make their tanks, they give their tanks an amphibious, which would allow them to attack across the river.
It was also a 2-point upgrade.
Yeah. Anyway, another kind of fun one.
Screw you in base to base.
Base to base. This was just more funny. Okay. Nothing wrong with it. So second edition, it's around second edition. So GW was trying to kind of improve like the melee element of the game by adding flavor, you know, by modifiers and damage output, all these things. And, you know, so they added what I call the Obi-Wan rule, which was, you know, I have the high ground Anakin. So if one unit is fighting you from an elevated position, they would go to bonus to hit, I think maybe damage. It's been a while, obviously. But that's what the idea was. If I'm standing above you, I'm in a better spot. The only issue with this was that the rule book clearly stated that you could only fight something if your bases were touching. Which means it would actually be impossible for me to be above you.
Above you, yes.
The better one, though.
But this was so bad, though, because at the time, you could manipulate being completely immune to being in hand-to-hand.
Yeah. let's call it what it was. Eldar is one of my favorites here. Eldar vehicles are skimmer vehicles. So their base is smaller than the model itself. Which means it was actually impossible to get into melee combat with an Eldar vehicle.
Also, if you made terrain that had a second level, which was very few and far between at the time, I could fly on top of it and you could never come up there.
Yeah, you could never fight me. There's no, you could not punch up into the tank.
Impossible. Can't possibly take it.
Yeah, because your toes are not touching me. You cannot punch me.
Obviously.
What? Again, I thought this stuff was awesome. All right, but let's start getting into some of the more fun ones. Let's get into more modern era.
Flying Circus.
I loved Flying Circus. Okay, this is one where I have to be this. Now, this rule came out in the 8th edition, which is when I had, after I had returned back to the game. And I played in a very, very competitive area with people who like to play a high competitive area. So when I say I played this, it was I played this at the like basic request of my opponents who are playing their own version of broken stuff, just because we wanted to see what this stuff was. So launch of one of the challenges GW has always had, as we mentioned before, is character preservation. You know, characters, we love our heroes in our stories. GW wants to deliver to us the ability to play our favorite characters on the board. And so the idea was they wrote rules. And so the characters we have are way better, which unrelated. This is why Crusade's awesome, because Crusade lets you do this.
Crusade campaigns, I highly recommend them.
So what happened was that these characters over time have just become better and better and better. They're physically powerful. They're force multipliers. Like, they're genuinely great. Like, and these rules made sense. Like, if you're an ultramarine and Gilliman's next to you or Kalgar's next to you, you should fight better. Your Primarch or your chapter master is there. If Eldrad's there, Karn the Betrayer, Drago, a big war boss, whatever the Tau have, if all
whatever the Tau have
is a thing. Is it that ethereal? The thing they stole from XCOM. Whatever they are, they make your army light years better by being there. So your opponent correctly wants to kill it now. Like now. So GW had to create a way to make it so they couldn't just make them die. And their choices were either make them impossibly tough, which they had done that in the past.
They did it again. That's what Flying Circus was.
No, Circus didn't make them tough. That's what I'm talking about.
Made them unhittable and uninteractable. That's
a different story. But what I'm getting at is that in the past, they've done stuff where they give them two up roll in those where it's like the character couldn't die and everyone hated that. So the GW said, well, look, what we're going to do is we're going to play the game the way we think it would go, which is that you shouldn't be able to just kill an opposing character from across the board unless you're a sniper. And the rule they made up was look out, sir. And the idea was that everyone in the army will be endeavoring to keep its leader alive. Now, I would say it's probably easier to keep said leader alive if you didn't put him on a giant white horse and march around the battlefield in the middle of everybody. Just saying, I want my Lord Solar on foot. That's all. Yeah, I want a new model. I want my Lord Solar on foot. I'll keep the exact same base size, but I want him on foot. It looks stupid. Anyway. So
you have a problem with horses. What did the horses do to you?
They made the charge of the light brigade. That's what it's done to me. Like we should be over horses by now. We don't have them today. Like, why did they come back? So anyway, this idea of, you know, look out, sir. I love, I think GW was completely correct to make it. I think the rule made sense, but the rules as written had a bit of an issue. And so The wording, just people are saying, the wording was, Lookout Sir said, if a character was less than 9 wounds, which is normal size, so you couldn't use like a winged hive tyrant, for example, but a normal character is not targetable. If it's within 3 inches of either a unit with 3 or more models in it, a monster or a vehicle, which makes sense because the troops or like a large thing, because by the way, monster, like a Tau battle suit had monster keyword, they would obscure the commander from harm. They would make sure that they couldn't be seen because the commanders shouldn't be on a giant white horse. Where this thing fell apart a little bit was that one of the words they use is vehicle. And one model in the game that had the vehicle keyword was an airplane.
How exactly is an airplane keeping Eldrad safe?
Hey, dream the dream. So what this would look like is Eldrad would be standing in the middle of a field, but hundreds of meters above him was an airplane moving at like Mach 3. And because of
nobody else could shoot it.
At the moment you were about to shoot, this airplane would obscure the view and no one could see Eldrad.
I want to talk about Flying Circus. I'm talking about that now too.
What?
Demonic Flying Circus was just demons flying. The flying keyword at the time,
that's true.
If you were flying, you were only hit on 6s because you were considered to be up high.
Yeah.
And
but also down low.
Yes. Yeah, well, you could decide because you could decide to land and go hit somebody. But you also couldn't be interacted with. I could put my model right in front of you. I'm flying. So I hit you shooting on 6s. And I'm not allowed to punch you. So you would just fly Kairos Fate Weaver and Demon Princes. And I wasn't allowed to shoot. I wasn't allowed to punch you.
Yeah.
And I can only hit on sixes. Oh, and on your turn, you could decide to land and punch me.
Yeah.
And if I didn't immediately kill you,
I don't know if you guys can hear it. I'm smiling the whole time telling the story. Oh, my God. This thing was amazing. This rule was awesome.
The only good thing about that was the grounding rule, where if you actually got hit and took a wound, you had to roll a six-sided, and on a one and two, you actually plummeted to the ground. Yeah.
But this version of six airplanes, it wasn't always six airplanes, although it may have been.
No, but the Demon Prince thing was legitimately worse.
That was worse. I mean, well, I don't know. Because the problem is, this is also 8th edition. Flying Circus was combined with Yanari.
Yeah, but I'm talking, this is before. This is
Flying Circus is before. No, this is 8th edition.
I'm saying this is also minus four airplanes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. You could make the airplanes minus four to hit. So
you just couldn't hit.
Yeah, you could, because there was no guaranteed hit. It was fun. I mean, it was a very It was a broken era. All right. But let's close out, I think, on this spanned multiple editions.
Where it started in what, fifth?
It started in fifth. It got really bad in seventh and eighth. And then
seventh was everything is the worst it can be.
In ninth and tenth. It's actually effectively cleaned up in tenth. But all right. So best intentions here. Again, I'm not criticizing GW. I know exactly what they were doing. So this is right around probably fifth, sixth edition, but heavily in seventh edition. We're in the throes of Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade.
They're trying to make the big deal. This is when they had the Gathering Storm storyline again. Like I said, was amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah.
But it effectively rallied together all of these forces because chaos was showing up everywhere.
Well, chaos was rallying. So you had Abaddon was bringing together all the forces of chaos to fight with him. And what you saw happening back was groups of Necrons, Tau, Eldar were appearing to assist humanity in their battle against chaos.
And also is same thing against Tyranids, because we had one side of the galaxy.
Yeah,
and on the other side
even orcs were. I mean, you didn't get true orc allies, but you were seeing like orcs lining. It was the way the lore was progressing. And GW decided, and I again think correctly in theory, that we should allow that to play out on the board. Why wouldn't I have a situation where the forces of chaos, because, you know, I'm talking about demons, chaos space marines from different factions are going to fight. And on the other side, why should it just be a space marine? Wouldn't, you know, if these are demons of Slaanesh, why wouldn't the Eldar get involved? You know, the Tau might want to help out. Necrons are whatever. Who knows why they're doing whatever they're doing. You know, but this was the idea. It was a really cool and fun idea. And everything went wrong. Like everything went wrong.
It was a trash fire.
This ended up with just so much anger and frustration. So let's have some fun. Let's go through how GW tried to do it. Again, love the idea. What you had was in the lore, for example, Cadia. Cadia is being threatened by Abaddon, right? Abaddon's pushing it. And what happened was Eldar started showing up on there because they knew the danger of Cadia falling. Necrons started showing up because, again, they knew that Tau, I think, actually helped out as well, too, randomly.
Certain places, yeah.
But it wasn't the entire army. It wasn't like a craft world showed up or an entire, tomb world showed up.
They sent effectively be kill teams.
But it was also, in the storyline, it was also people acting individually. It was people saying, the Eldar were saying, this isn't our fight, but certain Eldar were saying.
But on the board, yes, it was not.
Yeah, yes, it is. It's again, the idea was, it's like if you played Mass Effect 3, you get that thing of all the races coming together to
fight. Sometimes you got
to
have the Krogan.
Yep, exactly.
Let's do this.
That's exactly where they went with it. So what GW said was, well, look, we're not going to let two entire armies play together, but certain factions would happen. Like maybe some Tau battle suits who are, you know, a rogue faction wanted to go help out. So they'd send three Riptides over to help out.
I think you meant to say a Riptide formation.
Yep.
Competitive
players maybe figured this one out pretty quick. Where this fell apart, unfortunately, the reason it fell apart was because when you write rules for a game like Warhammer, Space Marines to me are pretty vanilla. They have minimal strength and minimal weakness. They're meant to be, you know, like the water of it versus like the acid or the base, which can be stuff like Tyranids and those ones. So every army is meant to have a strength and a weakness. And like Eldar are very fast, but they're not tough. Custodes are very tough, but they're not fast. Orcs are perfect in every way. I will not criticize them. But allowing players to pull from multiple factions allowed them to just to create perfect armies. And yeah, this didn't go well.
It also, the way that they let you pull them was they created a thing called formations, which would give, let's do Riptide Wing, for instance, just one of them. You would take three Riptides. That's super nice to add to any army.
Yeah.
And then because it was a formation, it would get
all the full
rerolls
it would get all the rules that they would get as if they were part of a full Tau army, but none of the bad Tau units.
It was so crazy. They had so many things that were just the top.
I didn't play. So was Tau Dar the worst? The Tau Eldar combo?
No, because the stars were still ended up being the most.
The Space Wolf thing?
Any blah, blah, blah star. It basically anything that had either a 2-up or a 3-up rerollable.
But no one who's listening remembers this. So name some factions.
Seer Council, Eldar.
Yep.
Wolf Star, Space Wolf, and several other people. Centurion Star. Again, there's just whatever the star. You had rerollable saves.
Didn't have a codex in 7th edition, right?
Nope.
It would have been great to have Death Watch, like a Death Watch Eldar.
They eventually broke the stars by Sisters. They eventually put Sisters of Silence in the game at the very end of 7th.
Oh, that's right. And that would shut them down.
And then if you got within 12, it wiped all the psychic powers.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you just went and you derped it up. So the end of 7th, they were desperately trying to fix it. And then they just went, merp, let's blow up the game.
Yeah. And so what they did was end of 7th edition, they announced that there would never be formations ever again. Everyone had wild joy for about a month because then we got allies. And again, really good place. This time GW they said, we'll all just pare it down. And the idea is that we're not going to let, Eldar and Tau align anymore, or Space Wolves and Eldar align anymore. But where this kind of broke a little bit was, from a narrative standpoint, a contingent of Guard who encounters a superior force would call for support. And when they call for support, that support would likely be Space Marines, or maybe Space Marines with an Imperial Knight. Mortarion's engaged in battle with, Space Marines, and he's on the verge of achieving, the glory for Nurgle. Zeench would sense this and would send Magnus to gain equal glory. So you could easily have a situation where Mortarion and Magnus are together. Those of you who played the game know exactly what I'm talking about. This sucked. And we're going to skip the Yunari because we're getting to them another time.
They have their own thing. But the thing is that you would have these combos that they made no sense. But
that was the problem. That was the thing. It's, again, GW's viewpoint, their idea was good. This is something that would happen narratively. Two problems with it. First, it was completely inaccessible for most of the armies in the game. If you played Orcs, there was no ally. Tau, any of the Xenos forces, you have no option to do it.
You also had...
It only affected Imperium and Chaos.
I mean, my Nova army was Bobby G, Saint Celestine, Mortar Guards, two Storm Raiders, like this hodgepodge of 50 different things that would never, ever see the table together.
The LVO list, was it 24, 12 guardsmen, 24 guardsmen? A commander, an Imperial Knight, the biggest of the Imperial Knights, and a bunch of Blood Angels.
Three Blood Angels captains.
Yeah, three Blood Angel captains, smash captains. Yeah. Or Mortarion and Magnus with a bunch of blood letters.
All those lists were just what
they were. It was nightmare zone. And so this, and GW fought this for 3+ years, even coming into 9th edition.
So what GW did, and this is nice, is we still have allies to this day. What they have, everybody has what's called a keyword.
Yeah.
I'm a guardsman, so I have Imperium, Astra Militarum, blah, 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 a regiment or whatever. Well, they had too broad of keywords in the beginning. If you were Imperium, you just had Imperium.
Yeah, I could have Sisters fighting with a knight, with a Space Marine, with
You could have anything.
I will say, though, from a lore standpoint, they all made sense.
You can't balance the game like
that. That was the problem. The game was horribly unbalanced.
It was because of the fact that you can't balance the players will always break the game if you let them. And that you can't balance, hey, I can take these 27 factions with all these detachments, blah, blah, blah. You can't figure out every single combination of units randomly put together. because they'll figure it. Somebody will figure out a way to use whatever special rule. And it seems harmless on this, but that rule now applies to this other unit from another codex. It broke down.
I mean, Magnus and Morty used to drive people insane because Magnus would fire Mortarian at you.
Yes.
He'd move like 30 inches and hit on twos with exploding.
Crazy. You had all kinds of tanks that were getting buffs from random people they shouldn't. And they had lots of interactions that just sucked. So GW did a really good job of putting...
When Gilliman would grant the rerolls to anything that was Imperium.
In 12 inches.
That was fun.
It was the entirety of the board.
I remember Gilliman surrounded by Hellblasters in an ancient. So I would shoot you and overcharge.
He would take the Sicarian tank and shoot it indirect.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot. Again, we haven't even touched on, there's a lot of rules we haven't touched on where things like putting a tank on top of a building. Remember the stacking of the impulsors or the repulsor?
I got yelled at by Kramer about that, by the way.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, remember when Brad broke the GW, looked at your game and went,
I forgot that photo was from your game. Yeah. Good job.
I had tanks hanging all over the building and the guy just went, no.
No, you can't.
You can't do it. Yes, you can. Well, you won't anymore.
Yeah, we haven't covered. So we're out of time, so we're not going to have time to do
it. I'm going to drop the story.
If it fits, it sits.
No, because I want to tell the one story with Pete.
Yeah.
One of the guys from GW was playing in a game at Adepticon, and he was doing something, and he's like, you can't do this, this, and this. And the guy's like, yeah, you can according to the rules. And he just looked at him and goes, not by tomorrow you won't be. Yeah. And just went upstairs and typed up an email and went, beep. Boop,
yeah, that rule's gone. Yeah, there's a lot of stories, actually, we should close that, of GW arriving at events super like happy with themselves, excited to see the players, really see the game in action, and then halfway through just like Danny Glover meme?
No, not Danny Glover. It's
damn it. Danny Glover's I'm too old for this shit.
Yes.
It's whatever his name is. But the meme where the guy's holding the pizza boxes and the whole room's on fire. That was GW's impression of what they had made. And again, every time the rules were written with pride and excitement and happiness, and they missed one keyword, and the whole thing came crashing down.
You did just make me just sit here and go, this is America.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of his song.
It's so good. But
Donald Glover, by the way.
Sorry. So with that, let's call it at this point. This was, again, just us kind of having some fun with it. There's endless stories like this from the game. So if people do like this episode, we're happy to do more of them. This is something I want to do because we've been doing a bunch of serious stuff for a little bit, and I wanted to kind of giggle and talk about times gone by.
Days of yore.
Yeah, we'll still end up doing pieces like this as part of the factions, but I'm happy to do focuses on this.
Also, I've been really working on my new radio voice, so I think I'm going to use that next time. My real serious voice, I'm going to drop
it
down.
There's no scenario you could hold that tone for more than 5 minutes. Good God. You're going to use your radio voice in between eating the microphone?
Every time I get excited, I would instantly drop it too.
It's like, hum, 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 hum.
And in the full grim dark.
So next week, we were going to do one thing, but then I started building a Death Watch army. So next week, we're doing Death Watch because Brad didn't even know. I just found this out when you guys live. Yeah, you guys learned that. Brad learned that live. We were going to do Knights. I'm going to push Knights out a little bit. Sorry, Knight players, but I'm in the middle of a Death Watch army, which means like the lore is just super in my head.
So that's pretty cool because it is the SEAL Team 6 of...
They're awesome. That's why. I really... Death Watch are an army that I love the concept. I love the lore behind it. And, you know, I actually like them now. Now they brought them back to the tabletop. I like it. So until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you next week.
Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.